Hi, here we are in Salem. It's Halloween night, and there's some people around here in some great costumes. Oh, look at these guys' costumes. Maria, you guys have on some great Halloween costumes.
This isn't a costume, lady. I'm a real policeman.
Oh. This isn't a real policeman. How long have you been a cop here in Salem?
7 years.
Oh, yeah? And in that 7 years, have you ever arrested any witches?
No, I haven't, but you may be the first one.
Oh, I'm the first one.
Oh, you think that's funny?
Huh?
You think what? That's a joke?
Hey, lady, do you have a permit?
Why?
Do you have a permit to be out
here? Permit to do what?
Just turn around now. We're going to cuff you.
Permit to do what?
Give me your hands back here. Stop giving us a hot time.
What do I have to have a permit for? I'm just out here being myself. It's Halloween. I'm dressed up.
Bad.
This is a costume.
Sorry.
It's a costume. It's going to be me. I'm a star. I'm a celeb.
Oh, are you really?
I'm a big celebrity.
You can.
I know the rift is in your eye. What are you trying to defy? Do go on, I see the way. Why don't you see it? Why don't you see it where you are? Why don't you see?
Welcome to the Cinematic Void Podcast. Cinematic Void is a cult film series that hosts screenings in the Los Angeles area as well as virtually. I'm your host, Jim Branscombe, and joining me as always is...
Hey, it's Nick Vance, Paranoid Futures. You can find Cinematic Void on the World Wide Web at cinematicvoid.com as well as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and all major podcast platforms. If you want to support the Void, you can consider joining our Patreon.
Joining me today is one of the great festival film programmers going right now. She is the founder and festival director of Salem Horror Fest. She's a good friend. She's also done some guest spots here in Los Angeles at Cinematic Void screenings. Please welcome to the Void, Kay Lynch. Kay, how are you doing today?
Oh, it's so good to be with you.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you in person, Zoom, email, whatever. You're one of my favorite people, and it's like I'm so proud and happy of like all the hard work you've done over how long is this year 8 of the festival?
Yeah, we did it during the pandemic, it's been 8 years, but mm-hmm. It's our 7th festival. So what happened was basically in 20 this past year, 2020, after 2021, I moved the fest out of October to April. And so I moved it to the next April just to give us those few extra months. So It's 8 years, but 7 fests.
When we talked last on the podcast, it was 2021. We were just coming out of the lockdown phase and things are reopening and you had been doing virtual and stuff. Could you talk about kind of pivoting back because just out of that area into back to doing in-person screenings?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty wild because doing virtual obviously was a whole other type of festival. And so it was a big disruption and a big wake up call because from like 2017, 2018, 2019, they're basically the same concept that just grew and sharpened over each year. And then the virtual happened and we had to completely rethink everything, completely reinvent how the fest was going to be. Then coming out, it was still kind of, you know, the pandemic was still going and people were starting to feel comfortable to come out. So it was still pretty dicey. So I knew we were not going to go back to what it was before the pandemic. And so we still did virtual in addition to the live events. So because of the uncertainty and everyone's anxiety about COVID, we did away with single tickets and we made it only pass holders could attend so that we could verify everyone's vaccine status. And it was the same people throughout the entire weekend, both weekends. And so it was, you know, in a way, a return to form in terms of the structure of how we'd normally do the fest, but much smaller audience. But it was nice because it was the same people throughout the weekend. And so it was a lot more about relationship building and people connecting with each other, which when we I've been doing it in October, it's almost impossible to do because it's so chaotic in Salem. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a madhouse. And so that experience that I want, where people are walking around and they see someone else wearing the lanyard and they go, oh, you're here for the fest too. And that becomes an icebreaker. That didn't really get to happen until I made the move to spring in 2023. And right away, it immediately clicked. We had all that extra shoulder room, and people were able to really get to know one another. And it was last year that I really felt like this is what I've been working towards. And it just felt like that first spark where I was like, okay, now we can begin. Now we can build.
I guess, being able to evolve, coming out and going in April was I definitely been a game changer from at least from what you've been telling me and what I've seen, because now you can actually have more eyes on the festival, where October you're just kind of lost in the sea of humans and lines and tourists and, probably, I hate to say it, but a lot of people that aren't interested in watching horror movies in October. Do you find now that it's in April, obviously there's more hotel space and people can easier for people to travel. Do you feel like you can make April the new Halloween in Salem in a way?
Absolutely, because that is exactly what was happening. It was the hotel inventory, despite Salem being such a notorious city that is on everyone's bucket list, we are a very small city. We're a population of 50,000 people who get 500,000 visitors in October. And so what I was finding is that my potential audience that I was marketing to were people who were already planning to be in Salem. And they're here for that Mardi Gras experience. And so it was a really small sliver. So everyone who lived locally or regionally, they're like, hey, okay, I'd love to come and support the fest, but I'm not driving to Salem in October. No, everyone avoids it like a plague. So the city is completely overrun with tourists. And these people are, if they're going to see a horror film on their vacation, it's got to be a heavy hitter. It's got to be a big one. It's got to be something that people can say, hey, I saw Hocus Pocus or Halloween 1978 in Salem. And that's a cool experience. But it's not why I started the fest. And so, and people who wanted to fly, I had a lot of people want to come saying, I can't find hotels. They're too expensive. I got to book out a year in advance. I was producing this fest that was only cater it was catering to the wrong audience. And so by moving it to April, it really opened things up. And now people are flying from all over the world to attend. They're here for the fest. And so we're able to build those relationships among the audiences, filmmakers. It's more cost effective. There are more options for places to stay. It's the weather's a little more reliable than it can be in October. It starts to warm up, but it's just, still, when I have this dedicated audience, I know that when people come and they visit Salem, that they don't necessarily want to sit in a dark room the entire time. These are film buffs. They're here for a fest. But I try to move things around, do creative programming that really complements and involves the city in a way that when people come to this fest, that they can go home saying that they experienced the city as well. And so when I first started the fest in 2017, in my former life as a director of marketing, I used to throw parties all over the world, gay parties. And I did some gay parties at South by Southwest, actually, correction, in Austin during South by Southwest. And what I noticed is how the whole entire city participates. So South by Southwest is happening, it's a fest, but the whole city is overrun by people visiting. And so it creates this really lively atmosphere that I wanted to incorporate on a much smaller scale in Salem.
Now, speaking of that, because the fest is now in April, it gives you more opportunities to partner up with different venues and businesses in the town, because October, everyone's so overwhelmed, but now they have more breathing room. Could you just talk about, just having the opportunity to actually make it, Salem Horror Fest really a part of the town itself?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been doing the fest for, 8 years, and before that, I've been doing events in Salem for 15, almost 20, and so I've done events at almost every venue, every business in this town, And so we really got the experience of being able to do these sort of events like literally anywhere, and to work with the businesses in a way that, again, just kind of shows off the Salem pride. We are a really small city, and so the business community is really tight, and everywhere that people want to go is within a really small distance, walking distance downtown. And so it just naturally lends for this sort of like campus mentality, where it's like, we're going to go see a screening here, and now we're going to go to the Monster Museum, or we're going to go to the Peabody Essex Museum or the gallery. And, there's all these different places that people can go. And the best thing about Salem is just walking around outside. It's the cobblestones, it's the ocean, it's, people dress up year round. There's a lot of charm in our city. And so that is part of the fast. And we've grown a really big audience because it being a film fest, it being a Halloween city, our followers are from all over the world. A lot of people who haven't even come yet, but they like to know what we're doing. And so for the city, downtown businesses make 80% of their revenue in October alone. That has started to change. Over the years, it just continues to grow, and the season gets longer and longer. It starts sooner and ends later. But winter until May, basically, it's pretty quiet. And so I see this as a huge opportunity to create this second Halloween, this halfway to Halloween point, where it's like, it's unsustainable for us to keep growing October. We are so far beyond the limit of what's like safe and sane and sustainable. So we've got to spread this out. There's an interest, there's a demand. And I just try to tell everyone that, like, look, everything that happens in October happens every day of the year. It's just fewer people. And so there can be some excitement and charm to having that Mardi Gras atmosphere. But I'm telling you, if you're listening to this and you want to come to Salem, do not come in October. It is a shit show.
That is probably the simplest, most direct way to describe it now. Because, I think the last time I went was 2018 in October. And it's like, yeah, I think I'm done for now.
You can't get into any of the restaurants, into any of the bars. You can't find any place to go to the bathroom. The lines for everything is really long. If you can't even get in there, like the Salem Witch Museum, not that I would recommend anyone go. It's sold out all the time because of the bus groups, and it's just so crazy. It's honestly not worth it. Everything that you're gonna pay, Salem is cool and spooky every day of the year.
I agree. Now, let's talk about this year's fest and like the kind of the build up. Like, how far in advance do you plan out what you want to do each year for Salem Horror Fest?
Planning. Oh, that'd be so nice. Now, I mean, you kind of come up with a direction and you go towards it. And if there's one thing I've learned in doing events, is that the only thing you can predict is that things will never go according to plan. So you really just have to develop this mentality of being nimble and being able to adapt and pivot when you need to. And so, I had a falling out with the cinema this past year. I worked for them for a year and a half. We've had a relationship for the last couple of years with the fest. These are new owners since the cinema almost went out of business a few years ago, and things just didn't work out between us. And I was not cool with being misgendered after 2 years, and they were very resentful of the fact that horror was so popular and they wanted to grow other areas and didn't necessarily work out for them. And so this year, it would be so much easier to do the fest in the cinema. But I've decided that we're going to do this fest everywhere but the cinema and go back to our roots. And when we were more underground, we were more punk rock, we were doing it at different venues, unconventional venues. And, as someone who's been a lifelong film fan, all of my most formidable experiences with cinema have been outside of the cinema. And it's not to just, cinema is an incredible experience. We have to protect it, we have to preserve it. But I think that this is an opportunity to say that cinema can happen anywhere, can happen everywhere. And it's really about the experience. It's really about the community and the people you watch it with. And so what I'm doing now, when I introduce films at the weirdest places, it's what I was doing in high school with movie nights with friends and just kind of saying, you got to watch this. And even then I was saying, well, why are we going to watch this? This is what's cool about it. This is what's interesting about it. And I think that is just such a universal experience. It's how we create new film fans, is that you meet people where they're at. And so I'm really excited this year, even though it's going to be really stressful. It's a huge opportunity to, more than ever, really involve the city in a way that when people come to this fest, they're going to know not Salem as a tourist city, they're going to know Salem as a really cool community.
And that's really wonderful, because, you know, there's a lot of people that would have just like taken, like, not being treated well by a venue because it's the venue, it's the movie theater in town. But I admire the fact that you stood by your principles, because I remember years ago when you're first doing it, you got kicked out of, I forget what venue you were kicked out of for, like, basically speaking out against, like, Trump and being political.
It was the Salem Visitor Center. We had, oh God, it's so stupid. We had this whole program. Mind you, they approached me. They said, we love the fest. We want to host some events. We've got this auditorium. And so I developed this program called Feed Your Brain, and all the films were adaptations of books. And it was going to be part of a campaign to encourage people to do more reading. And so it was everything from Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, to like a whole weekend of Stephen King adaptations and Island of Dr. Moreau. And just, it was nearly 30 films that was going to be shown there. And it was a week before we were going to open the fest when someone complained with screenshots showing how we were anti-Trump on social media. And so, like, the leadership at the Salem Visitor Center freaked out, and they gave me an ultimatum to either delete the posts or I couldn't continue with the fest there. And so I asked them, like, I just, give me a night. I'm not going to respond right now. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And that night immediately was like, I can't move forward with this. Like, just, what would it say? Like, all of our principles are about being vocal, about being welcoming, about speaking truth to power. Salem, the city itself and our history here, is all about how fear can be weaponized. And it just was a ludicrous situation to be in. So, you know, they technically didn't kick me out. It was an ultimatum that I couldn't move forward with. And it ended up blowing up in their face, because I think they expected me to cave. But when I said, no, thanks, we got another venue, I was very candid about what happened. And we got on Channel 5 News. Like, it was just became this media storm that they had to go into panic mode over. And literally all I did was just state the facts. And we were offered another venue to move the program to. And so that was a really crazy week of what is already a crazy week, anything leading up to a big event, but to have to move 30 events to a new venue was a huge shift.
But again, it's standing by your principles. So before we talk about the fest proper, I wanted to ask you about, you've now started doing pop-up screenings in town at Die With Your Boots On, which is, I guess, let's say boutique clothing place.
Goth couture.
And, you know, talk about that, because, like, you and I had some offline, we were talking about, like, pop-up screenings and secret screenings and stuff. Like, you already mentioned that, like, it's kind of like being back in high school or college or whatever, where you're like, got a room full of people, like, hey, check this shit out, this is a movie I really love. And, like, I feel like most programmers got their start by doing it. Could you talk about kind of stepping in and doing that, and just, like, kind of like giving, it's different than being in a movie theater, but there's a different kind of excitement to it, I would imagine.
It's funny. It's like, As I get older and I advance my career, it's like I dream of the day where I can just kind of copy paste the structure of what I do and repeat, like, oh, every year we do this, and to have that sort of organization to build upon. But that has not been the case for us. We've pretty much had to reinvent every year, and so we've become very nimble at being able to do events anywhere and everywhere. And what's exciting about, so we have several venues that we're going to be at this year, and Diary of the Bootsman is one of our core venues. The other venue is the Peabody Essex Museum, which has been a partner of ours since the very beginning. It's the longest continuously run museum in the country. It's a beautiful like institution, extremely culturally relevant, and so it's a great honor for that to be part of the DNA of our fest. And with Die With Your Boots On, what I'm really excited about is that I've been friends with the owner for over a decade now, and we've both been in the horror goth space, and so we've always supported each other, and but we've never really had the opportunity to work together. And when kind of everything unfolded, it was like, well, they have this really big stage in their store. It's huge. And there's a big reason why they chose that location. But as a new business, or as they've been around for a few years, but they had moved to this new location, they kind of had to regain their bearings and grow the business and haven't been able to activate the stage yet. And so I saw that as an opportunity to say, look, we have a lot of crossover audience. We love working with each other. This stage is perfect for what we want to do. It's like going to be such a cool experience to bring people in, and they get to see what's so great about your store and have a really cool movie viewing experience of so like what we're going to our first showing that we're going to do next week is Poison Ivy from 1992. And we wanted to do something that was kind of that 90s mall culture, and that was of interest to our audience. And so everything on their floor is on wheels, and so we get to move the product aside, and we switch over from a sales floor to a cinema over the course of 1 hour.
That's really cool because, I think, there's a lot of people, and this is for a lot of up and coming film programmers, you can program films anywhere. And this is just a testament to that. You find a venue where, hey, I think a screening would work there. So that's again something else I admire by just taking a look at a space and figuring out I can do something in there, which a lot of people will be like, I don't know, I need this or that. And it kind of leads into this year's festival. So as of we're going to talk about the things that are announced, and then I'm going to see if I can get the secrets out from you for the unannounced stuff. But you announced the big thing at the Peabody Essex Museum, and it's pretty relevant to Salem itself. Do you want to talk about your opening night?
So I am really excited. Going back to the Peabody Essex Museum, when I first started this fest, I really wanted to get community buy-in because I wanted to host it at various venues. And the Peabody Essex Museum, being one of the biggest employers, one of the biggest cultural institutions in the region, there's a lot of bureaucracy there. So I really had to go through a lot of people to get approval to do what I wanted to do. And so I had this whole presentation about what my approach to the fest was going to be, what our mission was, why it's important, and why it is a fit for the museum. And it just so happened that this was going to be the year that they first embraced Halloween and spooky, because for its entire existence, it's been resistant to really doing anything to attract the Halloween crowd. And I understand why, it makes sense, but it was a huge missed opportunity for a long time. But I totally understand the sensitivity there. But this year they had Kirk Hammett's movie poster collection, and so it was a perfect marriage. And they had these events that they would do every month called PEM PM, and so there were these night parties. And I had curated a few of them in other, like I've done like an Artopia event, a queer like 60s TV event. And this was my opportunity to do horror in this big, beautiful, lavish atrium. And it was our opening night party. So the very first event that we had, official event with Salem Horror Fest, was in this beautiful, pristine, prestigious venue. And only because the stars aligned. But after that, I was like, no, we have to do this every year. So now I just rent it out straight out. So the following year, I got Cassandra Peterson to be our featured guest, our opening night guest. And we basically just set up a stage, we set up a screen, rent the chairs, clear the floor. Once the museum closes, it turns into a stage show. We got Ryan Turek from Blumhouse to come give a keynote speech and moderate the discussion with Cassandra, who was a huge hit. And it really set the bar for what we could do moving forward. In some ways, Cassandra was taking a chance on us because we were still a really young organization with not a lot of history of doing events like this. I personally have, but not the fest itself. And so it went over so well. She was really thrilled with how it happened. Everyone's always amazed by how cool Salem is when they come here, and the venue is really nice. That experience allowed me to get John Waters to come the following year. His people were like, we don't do horror shows. We've had bad experience of horror shows. We don't get paid. All these things are like, there's all these reasons why we won't do a horror show. And I convinced them. I'm like, look, Cassandra had a great experience. Here's how the event went. Here's how it looked. Here's what they said afterwards. Like, please give us a chance. And John came. He basically did a one-man show. And we sold that one out. The full capacity of the atrium with seating is 400, 400 chairs. And so that was another big hit. And he was amazed by how the program went and the evening went. Said it was really smooth. And so it was these experiences that allowed us to build. And so I was able to work with John Waters one more time when we went virtual. We did Cecil B. DeMented 25th anniversary online in 2020. Last year we had Tony Todd, same concept. We had Kayla Janice from Severin, and she's the author of House of Psychotic Women and did the folk horror box set for Severin Films. Incredible badass woman. She gave a keynote speech about folk horror. We had Tony Todd as our featured guest. Andres Subasati from Room Work Magazine moderated that discussion. We were associated with the George A. Romero Foundation, so we had Suze Romero give some remarks, and it just becomes this sort of like glitzy night of horror where you have like the high class and the low class meet in the middle. And so this year we're when I was working at the cinema this past fall, we've worked so hard to be able to show Hocus Pocus because it obviously sounds like a no-brainer. And I was always advocating we should be showing Hocus Pocus every weekend. Like it will keep us in business forever if we do that. The problem is, this is some like inside baseball, but Disney makes you choose a track. You're either on the first run track with them and get all the new Marvel films, new Park Pixar films, or you're in the repertory track and you can't choose from both. You have to choose one. And so it was always a conversation of whether or not it was worth sticking to the first run Disney or the repertory Disney, and Hocus Pocus being repertory Disney. And we really hard to get to convince them to allow us to do it. And it was our second most popular title of the year after Barbie. And so looking at that, I'm like, all right, well, people love Hocus Pocus, and I love Kathy Najimy. So we were on her radar, and her agent had reached out to us after seeing that we had done it this October. Some of the other cast members were here last Halloween. And so Salem was just kind of a hot spot. People Hocus Pocus people seeing the opportunity there. So it was a perfect stars aligning. And so I'm really excited. This is an event. This is one thing that I have been able to build on the same structure year after year. And so we've done this several times now that it be, you know, just executing the event is goes really smooth. And it's just a really great night to showcase what the genre can be. And you know, a lot of horror fans will be like, Kevin and Jimmy, that Hocus Pocus, this is not like legit horror. And for me, I probably have the most liberal definition of horror. Like I have a really big umbrella when it comes to that. And I see it as an opportunity to involve more people in the genre and to get people excited because, you know, we'll have an opening keynote from Alexandra West, who's one of the co-hosts of the Faculty of Horror podcast. She's got a new book coming out. She's going to talk about beauty and horror. We're going to have Suze Romero again talk about the Romero Fellowship program that we started a few years ago. And we're going to have Linnea Quigley announce the award winners from the stage. And so this is just, again, a really kind of fun night that's turning into an award show. And the thing that's really special to me this year is that the entire program, there's going to be only women on stage the whole night. And so I'm really excited to celebrate that. And you know, to get Kathy in her own words about what Hocus Pocus has meant to her and what her experience with Salem is. She lives in New York, and so she's been here several times, and obviously with the second movie and now the third movie. The interest and popularity of Hocus Pocus is not going anywhere. And so I see it as a huge gateway moment.
I know horror fans wanna depending, but like Hocus Pocus was an important film to a lot of people of a certain age. And I also think, if you want to grow horror and genre and stuff, you have to be inviting to all kinds of audiences. If you're very narrow focused on what you do with genre film programming, you're gonna shoot yourself in the foot. And I think, being able to do Hocus Pocus this year, Candyman in previous year, it shows a variety, and it shows that, it's a willingness to grow. And like that's the other thing, this fest just keeps growing, and I think that's really an important thing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really important to just evolve and respond to the audience, respond to the opportunity, respond to the resources that are available. And for me, the biggest compliment has always been when I advocate for horror as being more than just tits and gore, which of course it always has been more than that. But a lot of people who aren't into horror, that's their first impression. And so I love talking about how horror has always reflected our cultural anxieties, that it's historic and culturally significant, and that there's so many ways to look at horror films and what they say about us and our fears, whether it's political, social, personal. And it's been a tool for people to feel less alone, to you know, to work on their fears, to feel less scared about things, to have their fears validated. And so when people who say straight up, I don't like horror movies, I don't watch horror movies, for them to at the end of this conversation go, wow, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way before. To me, that is what I'm doing this for, to really expand people's mind to think more deeply about the media that they consume, and just widen that tent, widen that funnel for people to participate. Because again, my mission is in line with the mission of everyone else in Salem, in that it's important for us to never forget the lessons of 1692. And I think that when it comes to the horror genre and the real life horrors that happened here, I think there's a lot of overlap to advocate for the importance and usefulness of fear, understanding it at least.
Obviously, we talked about the big opening night, and since I'm just going to go by the things that have been properly announced at the moment, and then we'll get to the secret shit, so to speak. You've recently announced a partnership with just not only, Susan Romero and the George A. Romero Fellowship, but you're also working at the Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline. and doing some Romero Midnights of the first four of his zombie films. Can you talk about, you know, obviously some people are going to say, wait, that's not in Salem, but I think you're going to have a good pitch on why it's still part of Salem and why it's bigger to not just, you know, Salem as a whole, but it's, you're growing the fest. Can you talk about your partnership with the Coolidge and doing those Romero Midnights?
Yeah, well, I love Mark. I was so happy to listen to your conversation with him. He's been a huge inspiration for me, as have you been, Jim. And so it's really cool to be able to work together. And we have a few times before. And so that door has just always been open for collaboration. And I never want to pitch something until I feel like I have like a no-brainer, a slam dunk, something that's really going to work for everyone. And so I've been sitting on this sort of open invite. and then, yeah, when it came to just every year, we try to do something to honor Romero and his legacy. That's why I started the fellowship, to identify up-and-coming filmmakers who embody some of that DIY punk rock spirit, and to encourage filmmakers that no matter what your lack of resources are, no matter where you are, or where you aren't, like, it doesn't matter. You pick up a camera and you can make a great film happen anywhere with anything, just as George did in his own backyard and made one of the best horror films ever made. And so, you know, Romero is part of the DNA of this fest, and we're always looking for ways to program his work and his legacy. And so it's also an anniversary year for Dawn of the Dead. So we saw it as an opportunity to build off of that and just take a look at the first four films of his zombie saga, talk about the fact that he invented this genre. And that was my pitch. And Mark took that and expanded it into zombies as a whole. So this is part of a 10 film series of zombies just in time for Easter. It's going to be really, really cool. And it kicks off with Return of the Living Dead, which I'm going to introduce because I really want to take this opportunity to honor Linnea Quigley, who is our longest running guest. This will be her fourth year with us. Every year before I'm ready to even think about guests, she's like, can I come back? She loves it here. Salem loves her. She is just so cool. She's such an icon. And the reason we love having her is because she's just so chill. She's so down to earth and just really great to work with. And so I'm excited to sing her praises. And to get some other surprise guests involved with this series. So yes, the Coolidge Theater is about 45 minute drive from Salem. Not super convenient, but Coolidge is an institution. They've been showing cinema for 100 years. It's extremely influential, important, and you know, this area is pretty sleepy. Salem is a very sleepy town. And so it's really hard to get people to come out to a midnight show. And so I saw this is an opportunity to expand our audience, to expand our reach, and to do something late night that a lot of people would be excited to participate in. And I'm just really excited to work with Mark on this because I think it's a really good collaboration. And so, you know, anyone who's concerned, people who live in the area, they go to both Coolidge and come to Salem. Anyway, it's not that big of an ask. People flying in, it's a little more challenging, but I promise that there's going to be something for everyone at all times.
I know there's probably, it's going to be more the traveling, because like one thing I learned when I was there in January, because we did our screening of Opera, and then I went to the Coolidge and did Deep Red with Mark, and there was people that were at both venues both nights. So I think it's a really great partnership, because then you're able to expand the fest and in a way expand Salem, which is a very, very small town, and get into the broader kind of, dare I say, world. But I know everyone knows what Salem is, but like as a festival, being able to grow and do satellite stuff, I think it's a valuable growth. And plus you get to, you know, you get to be one of the premier art houses in the country as well.
And again, it's, you know, I see myself as one of the ambassadors of Salem, where it's just, we're not just a horror fest that is in Salem. Like, we, and it's not that we just wait for people to come here to tell them why what happened here is important. I kind of see this almost like, I don't know, like knocking on someone's door and saying, do you have a few minutes for you know, Satan, our Lord and Savior? Because, you know, they did a Hocus Pocus, a midnight screening of Hocus Pocus this past October. I introduced it and used the opportunity to, you know, kind of point out the problematic aspects of Hocus Pocus and really kind of remind everyone why Salem is important, and, you know, say that it's still okay to enjoy something silly and all this, but just to kind of keep that thought, that idea alive, that what happened here can happen again, and it happens all the time everywhere around the world. So you know, I see it as an opportunity to just keep telling our story. And, you know, Romero's work is rife with so many different political themes that can be expounded upon. So
now, is there any more off-site, out-of-Salem venues you're going to be working with this year?
Yes, we have conversations with the Cabot Theater, which is just right over the border in Beverly. It's like literally less than 10 minutes from like downtown Salem. And it's a really gorgeous 850 seat theater that's also been around for 100 years. I love working with our local cable access station, Salem Access Television. They always come to our events and film them and program them. And it always brings me so much joy every October when I look at the schedule, and it's just got so many horror fests from past years programmed. This year, we're coming to them. We're going to do programs in their studio. We're going to project all kinds of films. We're going to have our shorts program, our interludes, our vocal mass hysteria program featuring filmmakers from the area. It's going to be a really cool opportunity. And and some of what we show will be broadcast on television. And some of what we film during the fest will also immediately go onto the station, which is only available to Salem residents. So, you know, that in of itself has a really cool novelty. I've always thought that, you know, Salem Access Television was such an underutilized resource in the city, because when I think about any town, any city that you go to travel with, and you come home at night, you come back to your room at night, you turn on the TV, there's the hotel station, and then the next one is the local one. So my dream is to, you know, just to have something that I've been part of shown late at night on the station, so that when people go home in 20 years from now, they go, I saw this thing. It's been hunting me for years. I don't know what it is. It was this weird thing I saw when I visited Salem. And so I think that it's a big opportunity for filmmakers to kind of create their own mythology. And I think it's a big appeal. A lot of filmmakers really want to be able to say that their film played in Salem. And I really want to give them that opportunity.
The other cool thing is that, you know, a lot of public access stations have kind of shuttered over the years, or if they're active, it's just like a screen that just gives you updates on community stuff. The one thing I've noticed about the Salem one is it's like they do the, you know, the big haunted happenings opening parade every year. It's an active like public access station, and that's kind of cool because it's like a lifeline to, like, you know, at least for me and probably for you, growing up in the late 80s 90s, like public access was a thing, and you got to see all kinds of interesting and somewhat crazy shit at times, depending on what time you're viewing.
Yeah, because at night you can show whatever the fuck you want. There's no, like, you can show nudity, you can swear, like after 10 o'clock it's beautiful. One year I programmed public domain horror every day of the month and really fun, and it was always amazing, like, we can show this. and why I think it's really particularly really cool this year is that because we are taking the fest to the streets and doing it at several different venues. For me, the theme this year is Salem Horror Underground. Like, we're here, we're gonna have secret screenings and we're gonna have pop-up shows. And so doing it at SATV for me is kind of like pirate radio.
You mentioned underground. I love that the scope of the fest can go big, Peabody Essex, Hocus Pocus event to like outlaw like screening on public access. That's I don't think there is another fest that is capable to do that. So kudos to you on that.
Yeah, we have the Satanic Temple headquarters. We've got a little bit of everything, and that's it's always been my goal to create an experience that you can't find anywhere else.
Now, can you talk about some of the other repertory stuff you have lined up for this year, or are you going to keep that secret? Because I know you said secret screenings as well.
Yeah, well, there's one secret screening that you are presenting that
Ooh.
we can't really say too much about what the title is, but I can, yeah, go ahead.
It's relevant to the town. We'll just put it that way.
Yes, and I had never heard of it, so when you brought this up and showed me the film, I was like, holy shit, where did this come from? It's a relic.
After the event, I'll bring you back on and we'll talk about this more in depth because like I don't want to spoil it. Shit. I can't spoil it. It is a crazy oddity and we'll just stay there. But I'm looking forward to being able to do that. And I appreciate you giving the opportunity to do something. I'm not sure any other festival would say, yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, our festival is not built. It's built on intuition and a lot of sweat equity. I'll break some news right here. We are showing a few prep films that are going to be accompanied by some of my favorite podcasts. So the Faculty of Horror is a podcast I've been listening to for 10 years now. They're actually a big inspiration of how I approached the fest. They take an academic view of horror, and it being film and them being like really two super badass women, it's nerdy, but it's still accessible and just really fascinating to listen to. And they always bring up social issues related to the topics. And so it was them and Romero that were my key inspirations for starting the fest. And I'm very happy to say that they've been part of the fest every single year, every single iteration. This year is no different. So with Alex West's new book called Gorgeous, Personal Essays on Beauty and Horror, they just so happened to choose Cat People from 1942 as the film that they want to show, introduce, and talk about, which no pressure for me because it's my favorite horror film. Thrilled. I have shown Cat People in a different context, but I'm so excited for it to be part of the fest. So excited to hear what they have to say about it. I'm a Val Lewton acolyte, one of my favorites. And the film is such a masterpiece in being able to scare people with things that you don't show. And I also just loved how Jacques Tourneur's work helped codify the film noir visual style, and that Cat People being a horror film also is a noir. So that's really exciting for me. Someone we in brought last year, who's coming back for their second year, is the Horror Queers podcast. Love these boys. They do amazing work. It's incredible the output that they do. Like, they've been going for 6 years now, I think. And it's incredible the depth that they go into and how many different films and the frequency that they release episodes. They're some of the hardest working people I know in the horror world. And they chose to honor Sarah Michelle Gellar's The Grudge.
That's an interesting choice because, you know, I remember the big boom of Japanese remakes in America. I remember the I honestly remember liking The Grudge quite a bit compared to some of the other ones. I wasn't a big fan of the American Ring, except for the scene where the horse falls off the boat, because that was just funny. But I mean, that's all I remember from that movie. But like, I remember seeing The Grudge and like being one of the ones that kind of actually got what made the Japanese one so fucking disturbing and creeping and made you, or creepy, I should say, not creeping, that made you not want to go to sleep after watching them. So that's a really interesting choice.
Yeah, it's, I too remember that being, you know, I do like The Ring, and it is well regarded. I think of that cycle, The Ring is probably considered the best of the American remakes, and partly because most of them were atrocious. And so Grudge being better than those, and, you know, mileage may vary. But it was funny, at a recent meeting, I told, you know, my team, oh yeah, we're going to be doing The Grudge. Several people were like, why? Let me just say that it stars Sarah Michelle Gellar and it's a podcast by two gay boys. Like, it's going to hit a different audience for people here who can enjoy the silly aspects of the film and of the genre in general. Which is another thing that I love about film in general and programming. Like, for me, the least interesting question you can ask is whether or not is a film good or bad. Like, I don't care what is interesting about it. You know, it can be bad, but things can be bad in very interesting ways, or they can be a very interesting product of its time. And so I welcome any and all types of horror films, no matter their reputation, as long as, for me, what's key is the context in which you present it. And I know that the horror queers and their commentary, their level of commentary is going to be not only informative, but really fun.
I think that's a key thing in, you know, context is everything in movies, because like, you know, I was in a meeting recently and someone had suggested, like, instead of showing the best of, maybe we should show the worst movies, or like so bad they're good movies. And I kind of like stopped the person, not to be rude. I was like, I don't like doing that with movies because I feel like that's a disservice to cinema. Even if a movie is bad, as I use the air quotes, there's something of value in it in there. And, you know, I've done Q&As with people that have made quote unquote bad movies, but like, when you talk to them, it's like no one sets out to make, you know, something, well, I can't say the same for Birdemic or something like that. But like, I guess I'll use the example. I did a Q&A for Birdemic 3 with the actors and James Nguyen, who directed it. And they had, apparently they did a Q&A at another festival that will not be mentioned, where the person didn't take them or, the Q&A seriously. And my approach was, you know, it doesn't matter that it's the same CGI birds from Birdemic 1 copy and pasted on the footage of Birdemic 3. I'm going to treat it like any movie. And it became a really good Q&A because everyone was so open and forthright. And I think you give movies opportunities to shine on their own merits. And sometimes, like, you know, we both probably have, I don't even want to call them guilty pleasures. There's no such thing as guilty pleasures. There's movies you like in a way that maybe you can't defend to someone, but doesn't change how you feel about them. So
well, you can defend it. You might not be successful converting other people, but I think that's part of the fun. No. Like, for me, it's Stripped to Kill. I'm like, no, yeah, this movie is fucking awesome. And I will sing its praises to the day I die.
I agree with you. I just did a list of like top 10 LA sleazy movies. And someone's like, where's Stripped to Kill? And it's like, fuck, I should have put that on there. But it would definitely be number 11. And I think it wasn't that I forgot. It's just like, there's just so many, you know, there's something about trashy movies that are very politically incorrect that you're like, how was this even made?
Yeah.
That, I don't know. It's a world I live in. I mean, I just did Vice Squad, which is another one of those movies. And it's just like, you're either going to accept that the movie's just fucked up on its own merits and just kind of go with the ride and just enjoy for like the sleaziness, And you know, at some points it's just, it's so sleazy or like so hardcore that not that it becomes parody, but it just becomes a different experience. Like it's like, I don't want to say you get numb to it, but like something like Strip to Kill, it's just like, you know, after she goes, Kay Lenz, it's like, I have to keep stripping because like she's now obsessed with doing it. And it's like she's pivoted from being a cop to a stripper. And now she's obsessed with.
She has a taste of that freedom and she's got to explore a side of her that she hasn't before.
I mean, on a surface level, that is a ridiculous plot point. In that movie, it seems like I get it because it's a self-discovery and freedom. And yes, it's to get gratuitous nudity in there. I mean, it's a Roger Corman production, so yeah. we can't.
It's from a woman's point of view, you know. Yeah. So it does. You know, Kat Shea's work reveals a lot about, you know, about that gaze, and you know, there's a spoiler, like. The killer reveal, I think, is really interesting in a way that I wish I could celebrate it more openly, but I don't want to give it away. So I also just like to highlight that it's very interesting and in some ways progressive.
And that's the thing. A lot of the like very exploitive movies that have a lot of exploitive moments and problematic elements in a weird way also tap into a very progressive thing, because even though they might deal with like strippers, hookers, pimps, cops that are hooked on drugs, just awful human beings, it's a freedom where you're allowed to see people as they are and see people kind of make choices that are like, huh, it's almost on the right side of history, even though that character is terrible. So you're going to have various podcasts and they're gonna, you know, screen movies and talk about them, you know, do podcasts. Is there any other events? You know, we, you know, you're doing Hocus Pocus, we hinted at my secret thing. Is there any other Salem related things you're gonna be screening?
Yeah, so we are home to many film locations, several, and including Hocus Pocus, but there's a little movie called Lords of Salem that some of it was filmed here. And so Heidi Hawthorne's house is in the McIntyre District, which is the historic district of Salem. And we are going to be hosting private screenings with a gourmet dinner.
Ooh.
On the weekends. And so it's extremely limited. It's going to be less than 15 people. We're really excited to do this. So we'll show the movie, we'll have someone talk about the history of the house, and you know, just the novelty of being there. We've got a wine sponsor, so it's gonna be a very exclusive, fun thing that I'm really excited to experiment with. This is something that we've never done before. And Rob Zombie is a local boy. He grew up in Haverhill, which is just 45 minutes north of here. And so, yeah, I think that it's a lot of Massachusetts pride going into this. And so we just so happen to be friends with the owner of the building.
Now, it's a very distinct apartment building. It's really, really cool. And that's, again, your innovation, because it's like, you know, there's been people that have hosted screenings on sites of movies. You know, when I had Mark on, they talked about going to Medfield and showing Shutter Island there. But to have like dinner and a movie, and the movie that at least the exterior was shot at, is Jesus, it's next level. I don't even know what to say about it.
In this particular situation, and it often is how other things that I attempt to do, is we get a lot of people who want to get involved with the fest. You know, they approach me, what can I do? And there's only so many like ticket takers that we need, or ushers or whatever. And so my first question is always like, well, what can you do? Like, what is your thing? Like, what are you good at? I have no use of people just standing around. And I have someone who is such a rock star. His name's Brody. He is a chef. And he's always been like, what can I do? What can I do? And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with the chef? And so this came up. It was like, well, we know Nancy who owns the property. And so this is really exciting. But then something that we do for our filmmakers is we offer breakfast. We do like a filmmaker networking breakfast on Saturday and Sundays. And so this series is gonna do the breakfast for them too. So it's like, oh, we actually have like a festival chef.
That's really cool. Man,
Yeah,
I.
it's really cool because otherwise I have to cater and everything, which is not, catering breakfast is not difficult, but with Brody, he's so creative and passionate and loves horror. The things that he's going to cater is not what your typical caterer would do. There's going to be a lot more thought and creativity put into it.
Every aspect of this festival has just like the little touches that kind of like just make it stand out in every way. Like, and again, it's a testament of just building and working with a community as opposed to like, a lot of film fests are just in a place. The place is integral and the town is supportive of it. And that's really cool.
Feel incredibly fortunate, and it's really hard, but it's this is why I do it, is because we have an experience every time we have a guest come. Every celebrity who's ever come through the Horror Fest, when they're ready to leave, they're like, what's the real estate like? Yeah, like everyone wants to move here. Everyone loves the city when they come to visit, and it's so chill. And so, yeah, it's just, I love that everyone who comes immediately starts fantasizing about what their life would be like if they moved. And so I would love to be, horror Hollywood East.
I think there's a lot of potential in that. It's like you and I have talked about it. Like eventually, when my time in LA ends, I'm gonna be venturing back east and in that area. And like, I'm not saying Salem directly, but like, it is a good fantasy to have. It's
Yeah.
a good thing to manifest because it's a beautiful town. It's on the sea, cobblestones. Yeah, you have to deal with October and like a million people, but there's 11 other months out of the year where it's a really beautiful place to be, especially in the, I mean, it is in the fall, but might just have to stay in your backyard all October or something.
That's what most people do. And when that day comes, hopefully I'll have my own venue.
That'd be awesome. I know I don't want to say too much about it, but I know you have lots of things in the fire cooking, which I always appreciate because it's like, man, I think I'm busy, and then I look at what you're doing, it's like, I'm not even close.
Oh, well, it's not a competition, and everyone who, Mark, you, everyone who's ever programmed. What I always tell people, I'm like, because people from the outside, they just see the end product, they just see the event or whatever, and they're like, wow, it's so cool, it's so glamorous. How do you, it looks so easy. And it's like, no, you don't understand. Every single moment of every single day is the Kermit the Frog gif. Just like yelling and flailing your arms. That's my internal monologue at all times.
And that's something I want to ask you about since we're kind of talking about, putting together something this magnitude. Like, you're, and you could correct me, like, you're pretty much the staff for this festival.
Yeah, this year I'm really proud and excited to say that we've had some rock star volunteers step up, and I'm finally figuring out ways to get more people involved earlier. But still, that is an ongoing process. And yeah, for me, being a programmer is being a producer, being a host, being a marketer, being an entrepreneur. You have to an accountant, like there's so much that goes into it, and it's really difficult to do everything well. I do the website. I have a designer who does our main graphic, our main poster every year, our artwork, but I do a lot of like the more mundane graphic stuff that we have to do throughout the year. There's so many, so often I have to figure things out that I don't know, like permitting and I'm a travel agent. I'm there's so many different aspects to this. And so yeah, that's why my internal monologue is quite scary, but it's allowed me to really do a wide variety of things.
I mean, being in a film programmer is, and I've said this countless times now, it's more than just picking a movie. It's about building the experience, and like especially on a festival level where there's so many moving parts, especially when you're bringing people in, you're also curating what's going to be screened. You have a big opening night, which is going to set the tone for the whole fest. Then you got to figure out the process of like not only the rep stuff, but also looking at new films and discovering new filmmakers and deciding, like, in a way, like who you're championing this year and kind of pivot a little bit. Could you talk about like what you have in store for new releases coming up for Salem Horror Fest?
So when we first started, we didn't really have a reputation. So our entire program was repertory films. And so what I did was, in keeping in theme with being a very politically active and vocal organization, because again, we started in 2017, all of the rep stuff we showed, we did double features based on a political theme. So like we did American Psycho and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We did The Mist and They Live, Freddy's Revenge and Cruising, Get Out and People Under the Stairs, all kinds of really fun stuff like that. Or we did some environmental things. We had a whole Weekend of the Witch of like feminist horror. And so we would just like present all these classics in a certain context. And that kind of set a wide net to get a lot of people interested. And once we had them in, and over the few years, it really took three years to get to the point where we were starting to get a significant amount of submissions. And then the pandemic happened, and we couldn't do reps. We moved forward with virtual, but we were completely beholden to all the new things on the festival circuit. And because the pandemic took out most of the fests and most of the fests went on pause, there weren't a lot of opportunities for the filmmakers who are currently shopping their films around to be seen. So our submissions blew up during the pandemic, and we got to feature all new films, and it was like 25 titles, I think. And then the filmmakers and the audience were all on Twitter, and there's just this excitement of people being able to connect with one another during a time where everyone was in lockdown. And so that really put us on the map, because the filmmakers had, we're very grateful for that opportunity. And the audience as well. And so now we attracted people who want to take a chance and watch something that they have no idea what it is about. Where before, to get someone to, to pay $10 to drive through the traffic, to, pay more money for concessions, and to, sit and watch a movie and know nothing about, is a big ask for a lot of people. And so it's taken us several years to get to the point now where we are attracting the people who want that and who have seen how we program long enough to know that they can trust our taste. And there's, various aspects of what we're drawn to. And so I think now people know, they might not know the films, but they'll know what to expect in terms of our approach to curation. And so it's really exciting to have a growing audience of people who are just eager for something they've never seen before.
And I mean, that's another testament to how you've grown the fest. And, it's because, I think a lot of people focus on like, the I don't want to say name festival because I don't want to sound disparaging to what you do, but, Sundance, Slamdance, you know, those kind of things. And I think being genre focused, there's a lot of opportunities to actually show movies that probably wouldn't have a fighting chance at something like, you know, one of the bigger marquee festivals. And, you know, showing to the right audience and having a chance to actually build and become its own cult film down the years or down the road in the next couple of years. I think it's a really incredible thing to do because, you know, you're focused because you get a lot of female filmmakers, you know, queer filmmakers, trans, like you cover a lot of the underrepresented filmmakers who I know there's a lot of kind of lip service you get from festivals where like, we're going to champion that stuff. You actually go out of your way to make sure you do champion. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, part of just being vocal about our ideals and what we will and won't tolerate from people who attend, it really kind of sets the tone of like, you know, there aren't a lot of organizations that will be as candid and upfront as we are about those things. And, you know, I try to do everything we can to, you know, to walk, you know, not just to touch the talk, but to actually, you know, embody it and live by it. And so that has really kind of attracted all the right people to want to see this, you know, these voices. And it's also attracted the filmmakers to know, okay, these values are important to the fest, so I'm going to prioritize, or, you know, make Sound Horror Fest one of the ones that, you know, we really want to get into. And so it's a lot of just kind of letting people know what our ideals are and attracting that talent and attracting the right people for the audience. Because like the way I see it is, like, as a program where I'm not just curating films, I'm curating my audience, and I'm making sure that I understand who they are, because that's how I'm going to be able to deliver them something new and fresh that they don't yet know that they love. And so, you know, one of my favorite things about this aspect of the fest is when we have alumni, we have repeat filmmakers who come back, and within the horror, you know, the Salem Horror Fest family, we have these kind of, you know, these all-stars, these people who have several films go through the fest. I become a big champion for like Alice Mayo McKay, who did So Vam. She won the jury award. We've ended up showing her next film, Bad Girl Boogie. We've shown T-Blockers, Satanic Panic, and this year we're showing her fifth feature length film. This girl is 20 years old. This is her fifth feature film.
She's on that Fassbender like trajectory of like cranking out movies or something like that.
Yeah. And for me, I'm like, I put all my chips on her because they're not, you know, when it comes to, you know, we have a lot of these, like the horror masters, like, you know, the name directors who have a body of work. There are very few that are women and zero that are trans. In any genre. And for me, I just see Alice as the feature, and there'll be a day whenever there's an equivalent of the Masters of Horror, she'll be one of them. You know, there's the Monster Makeup Boys. This is a team, three gay men who did Death Drop Gorgeous. They did Saint Drogo. They're working on a new film. You know, they're from Providence, so they're not, you know, they're pretty close by, and they've been so supportive, and I love their work, and it's just it fills me with so much pride to see these filmmakers go on to, you know, many of them get their films picked up for distribution. It was really exciting the moment that I realized that distributors were looking at what we were programming. And then with the fellowship, you know, to be able to pair these up and coming filmmakers with those who have been in the industry for a little while now and have kind of been in those trenches before and are maybe a few steps ahead. So like Travis Stevens has been one of our mentors for the filmmakers for, it will be his third year, same with Jen Wexler. We've had Carter Smith, Lucky McKee, and we pair them with our filmmakers just to become mentors, to offer advice, and to say, hey, this is something I wish I knew, I had learned sooner, because it would have saved me a lot of time or a lot of money. And it's really exciting because my dream is that the filmmakers who are chosen to be mentored eventually become mentors themselves, and that we create that positive feedback loop. And it's all about that knowledge sharing and trying to make the filmmaking process easier and more accessible to more people, because that's how we get more new voices, is when those people realize that they have the tools, they know enough that they can just take a chance and make a film, and you never know, it's going to be the next Night of the Living Dead.
That's the thing, and that's kind of the perfect, you're working on not just curation, but cultivation of talent. And the fact that you have repeat filmmakers and filmmakers that continue to grow and evolve, and that is building for the future. Where I think just living here in LA, and I meet a lot of up and coming filmmakers, and dare I say, some pretend filmmakers, I think a lot of people don't, horror means different thing to filmmakers. You're either in it for because you love the genre and you just want to make the best horror movie you can. And then there's people that treat it as the disposable, like, well, horror movies make money, so that's why I'm going to do it. And the fact that you're weeding out and you're finding the people that really love it and have something to say and a unique voice is incredible. So again, I love what you've done with this festival and just how it's grown. And my next question is, where do you see the fest going in the future? Do you see yourself expanding even further out of Salem? Do you see creating more innovative events of unique ways to watch movies, or do you just want to see as it happens and let it just happen on its own?
I think that there's a general direction that I try to move in, and I just remain flexible to the circumstances and the opportunities that present themselves, because a lot of times either it's people or places or something will just present itself and say, hey, this is a really cool idea, or it would be really cool, and all of a sudden that's what we're going to do. It wasn't part of the initial plan, but nothing ever is. And so I think that no matter what, there'll be an element of that jazz moving forward. But something that's really important to me, moving forward in the next few years, is really building the organization, building more of a team, a year-round team, because the festival cannot grow unless we have a bigger team involved, because I can only do so much on my own, and I can't necessarily maintain this energy in perpetuity. At some point, I'm gonna crash. And so my dream is for the fest to continue without me. So I'm really trying to figure out how that becomes true, is how can I create not just a fest, an organization that can sustain itself and allow for more people to get involved and new voices to be heard, because who I am and my approach, my philosophy with a lot of these things have been the forefront of a lot of what we do, but I don't want that to be the case moving forward. I want to figure out how it evolves organically, and that has a team, a safety net to just weather the storm as I've had to do over the last few years. And so I hope my own venue is a part of that. But right now I'm just looking, for me, it's like we're so close to 10 years. This is our 7th year. I'm really just focused on continuing to sharpen our approach and to improve our experience to get to the 10th year, do a little bit of a victory lap, and see what the future, where the future leads from there.
Outside the festival, you've also got to host and introduce movies. You've done Coolidge, you've done it out here in LA. And I remember when we first started talking, you were just becoming comfortable in doing more public speaking and that kind of stuff. And now that's a few years later, when I asked you, how do you feel about, not only being a film programmer, but also being a host and someone who's sharing knowledge and your personal experiences with the films you're presenting? Could you talk about just your personal growth with that?
Yeah, and actually that also goes back to the previous question about I see myself as an extension of the fest, and that has been a way that I can broaden our horizons. As the festival director of Salem Horror Fest, I've been able to go visit you in LA and host screenings, and use my own voice more explicitly. When we first started the fest, we got a lot of attention really fast, simply just by being very candid about how fucked up it was, everything that was happening every single day under the Trump presidency. And there was a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of organizations and businesses were just remaining silent. They wouldn't speak to the insanity that was happening. And so I know for me and a lot of people, it was like, is anyone else seeing this? Like, this is really fucked up and crazy, but no one's really commenting on it except for the people at work, the people in our immediate circles. And so I knew, I was like, you know what? I can be an organization that just says, no, this is fucked up. And we were very politically angry. I mean, still angry. But it was a big part of who we were. It's just saying, fuck this, fuck that, this is not right. And it got a lot of attention, including from people who really didn't like what we had to say. And so we were constantly bombarded by trolls and all these right-wing people who just want to try to take us down and just flame our comments. And so what I found is that by doing that, it attracted people who were like, all right, well, I know where this festival stands. I know I'm going to be welcome and safe here. So it attracts those people. Because with the audience, I just want, when you come to Salem Horror Fest, it's like you're either going to hang out with people who are like you, or people who you will make you feel safe. It's just a really safe environment, and it attracts people who are underrepresented and all those who just want to be supportive in that space and hear new voices. And it keeps out all the crazies, because then all the racist assholes, they're never gonna come to my fest because they know what we stand for. But it takes a lot of energy to be that angry all the time and to maintain that sort of public middle finger is really tiresome. And I'm getting older and more mature, and realizing that it may have worked for us, but it's not necessarily changing anything. And so what I found is that, you know what, if I'm just more present, as like a happy and confident trans person, that does a lot more good, and it still pisses off all the right people. So rather than being angry all the time, I can be happy and have the same outcome. So that's something that I've really have appreciated about my journey and transitioning, is that one, I'm just more comfortable being seen. I'm very happy to be my body, and I love myself, and I want other people to see that. Trans people are more than just their genitals. It's shocking. It's like we are film programmers, we are filmmakers, we are every single aspect of society. And I get a lot of really nice messages from people being like, it's so cool to see someone who is vocal doing something that's really cool. And it's something that I've always wanted to do my whole life. Like, I've always been into film. I worked at Blockbuster. I applied for Blockbuster on my 16th birthday because they wouldn't take anyone younger. Like, I've been working toward this my entire life, never feeling comfortable in the spotlight. But now that I am in my true body, I've been able to branch out and talk about why I think the horror genre is so beneficial to everyone. And so I really appreciated the opportunity to come out and hang out with you and present The Cell, Bram Stoker's Dracula. I have some ideas for June.
After we get done here, we'll talk about June. Because, yeah, if you're ready to come back, you know you have an open invite. So
thank you. So I think that's another big part, too, of, like, the future is just finding more places to spread, you know, my wings, but also just to continue raising the awareness of Salem itself, the lessons to be had here, and the really fun experiences to be had here as well.
I want to say it's like the way you intro stuff, because you put a lot of thought, you have stuff written out. It's things I can't do, which is because I just think it's really unique because, like, you know, everyone has personal journeys with movies. Like, I do a whole YouTube series about my personal journey with, like, movies I saw and, like, where they led me. And I will admit that, like, while I've had that germ, it was watching you do intros that made me, like, maybe I should do this more because I've done it in writing and stuff like that. Because, you know, obviously, you know, we're different people, different experiences, but, like, it just the way you talk about, like, how these movies personally affected you and how they helped you, you know, the case with The Cell is really important, double because of, like, what the movie's about, and of course Jennifer Lopez, and, like, it's just a really, really, you know, it's taking a movie which, like, you know, some people might be like, oh, it's The Cell or whatever, but, like, you took the movie and gave it a context that let people appreciate it in a completely unique way, and also allow the movie to be part of you. And obviously you're not the filmmaker, but because you had that personal connection, you were able to, like, get people and get their eyes open and enjoy the movie and take the movie in a different way. And I feel like film programming is all about experience. And we talk about a lot of audience experience, but I also think film programming is also the film programmer's experience too, because you're sharing your personal experience as to why you're showing it. So yeah, I just want to give you a shout out because, like, I wish I could write an eloquent, like, dare I say, monologue about a movie instead of just, like, kind of winging it.
Well, you aren't giving yourself enough credit. You do that very well. And yeah, I always try to find, I mean, I transitioned late in life and I regret it deeply, but it's because I didn't have the information, the emotional testimony of others. Like, I couldn't see anyone else just living publicly, letting me know that this was even possible. I grew up in New Hampshire, so it was extremely sheltered and a very limited view of what was possible. And I realize now that I'm like, there are a lot of other trans people out there who don't yet know that they're trans. And there are a lot of people who have never met a trans person, and all they see are the headlines and the crazy talk and the Ace Venturas and all this, like, bullshit. And so I just know that by existing and being happy and confident and just myself as, like, an actual human being, there are a lot of people who I'm the only trans person they know, and I really don't want that to be the case. But it's if it gives just one person a different point of view, I think that it's just really important to broaden people's horizons in that way. And when it comes to figuring out how it relates to film, like, for me growing up, film was therapy. It it made me feel less alone to watch movies that were scary, because that sense of existential dread matched the way I view the world every day. And so in seeing that, I'm like, well, I'm not alone. This experience exists elsewhere. Like, I know this feeling. I wish I didn't, but I at least know that I'm not alone. And so like I always go to Carnival of Souls as a film that has like just helped me communicate with my own therapist. This is how it feels. And the cell is very similar. And so when I talk about these things, especially when it comes to like mental health, it's not necessarily to talk about my experience. I want people to think that this is available to them as well, that whatever they're consuming, there are many ways that it can benefit them if they want to dive into the subtext, because those are the things that we relate to. And in exploring and sharing with other people, I think it's a really interesting way to share your own experience because, like Roger Ebert always had that really famous line about movies being empathy machines. I think of horror the same way, as that it's a way to experience someone else's fear, or to exercise your own. And I think it's a really great way, a really great tool for people to understand all different kinds of experiences. And I don't know, just to remind people that their fear is real and it's valid. And movies are a really safe way to explore that.
That is perfectly said. I personally think when I really got into cinema, not just watching movies, and you might be the same way, but I don't want to, well, I don't want to suggest that, but like I get the kind of feeling that movies, in a way, save both of our lives and put us on the path we needed to be. And same with like when I got into punk rock, because if those things weren't in my life at that age, I don't know where I would be. And I think, you mentioned Carnival Souls. That was my movie of the pandemic. That I watched that almost every night. Maybe not every night, but there was weeks where that would be on. I would watch it. I'd wake up. I'd hit play again, just watching on endless loop because it was the movie I related to the most during that whole time. And I don't know. It's like, you feel like a lost soul. You watch someone's a lost soul, but even though not necessarily Carnival Souls doesn't have the happiest ending, it's weirdly hopeful in a strange, strange way of like understanding yourself and like you're not lost. You're just not in the place you need to be.
Yes. Ooh, I love that. I love that. Kind of my great big epiphany that led me to finally transitioning was a near-death experience. I was in a very horrific car accident. Car got totaled. If you had seen the car, you would assume that whoever was in it would died, but I survived. And what happened immediately after, everyone would think, oh my gosh, don't you feel so lucky to be alive? Like, don't you have a new lease on life? And no, my biggest feeling was that was my opportunity to get out of here. Like, that was my chance to be taken out of this miserable existence in a way that it wouldn't have to happen at my own hands. And the more I thought of it, and the more I thought of that as a missed opportunity to leave this earth, I just became obsessed with it and went to a really, really dark place. And it got to a point where I was like, well, if that's really how I feel, then who the fuck cares what I do with my life now? You know what I mean? Like, if I'm willing to go to that length, then I have nothing left to fear. And I remember watching Happy Death Day for the first time, and I got so emotional watching that movie. And it's so silly, and but for me it was really deep, and it kind of made me feel very hopeful. And that no matter what headspace you're in or what situation you feel stuck in, that no matter how long or how often, there is a way out. And so yeah, that film and Carnival of Souls together were the two films that kind of said, well, hold on, there's a way out of this, or at least there's a way to understand it, which is the first step.
Yeah, I again, it's like maybe not the actual intent of the movies, but like that's the beauty of, art and cinema. It's like the filmmakers make a movie, but the interpretation is open. Even, and I know there's people that badly interpret movies all the time, and well, most of those people just don't pay attention, but like, every person's experience is unique. And I think that just leads to like, this is why Salem Horror Fest is so unique, because it's uniquely your vision, and no other human being on this planet could ever put this together. So, kind of to close things out here, I wanted to ask you, what are your closing thoughts on like, where you're at now as a film programmer in the fest, and what are you looking forward to the most in 2024?
I had mentioned that like last year was the first year that I felt like, yeah, I've been slamming these two rocks together and I finally got the spark of what I've been working towards. And what that spark was having all these people in the same city, in the same vicinity, meeting each other. And because of the audience that we have cultivated, there are a lot of like-minded people, just open-minded people. People who don't often go out because they don't often feel safe. And in an atmosphere where watching all of these new films with the filmmakers in attendance, it was just so funny to see how joyous it was. Like everyone was smiling, laughing, hugging, crying. And every single person came up to me saying, "Kay, I can't believe how nice everyone is." And they kept saying that so often. I was like, you think people have never met a nice person ever in their lives, which I would believe, but like it just was so amusing to me that this horror fest was a love fest, that everyone just felt so happy and welcome, and they just like let their guard down. And so to me, that's when I knew that I had finally created something special. And I want to see where that goes from here. I want to see how this year builds on that, and that some of those connections that were made last year, I'm already seeing on social media, like, "Hey, I'll meet you at the fest. I'll see you again at the fest." And that's just like the most wonderful thing to see, because ultimately that's why we do this. And it was just a really big honor for me. For the first time, I've been producing events for 20 years. And a lot of the motivation behind that was to escape my own mind, to keep myself busy. But last year, it was the first time that I actually enjoyed my own event. I actually had fun being amongst everyone else and going, this is pretty cool. This is really nice. And so I want to maintain that moving forward and see where it can go.
Excellent. Kay, where could people find you and Salem Horror Fest online?
Yeah, so Salem Horror Fest, pretty easy, salemhorror.com. Horror on Instagram, and my personal Instagram is Video Coven. That's all you really need.
That's all you need. Kay, I want to thank you so much for your time, and I am personally looking forward to this year's festival, and I know a lot of people are too.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have you. I'm so excited for people to witness what you have in store.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And until next time, see you in the void.
I don't have any objections to witchcraft in Salem at all. I enjoy it. It's good for my business.